And just like that, the countdown to the end of the year has just begun. I believe that for some of us, this year was filled with many blessings, learnings, great opportunities, sad and happy moments that we will all reflect on as the years go by. I wanted to wish you happy holidays and to be ushered into the new year in good health and lots of love from those you cherish the most. So this is the final episode of the Mbalunoko podcast for 2022. And I honestly look forward to many great conversations in the new year. I'm going to be changing things just a little bit, where only 2 episodes a month will be released instead of 4. I guess quality over quantity, right? And once again, thank you to every single one of you that has been an avid listener of the Mbalunoko podcast since I started this back in 2020. Moving on to this episode, I chat to Shireen Gelbert, who's the owner and managing director of Seafruit. She is an entrepreneur and commercial agriculture professional that has been in the industry for over 15 years. Let's hear how her business helps growers and clients see fruit differently through unique, practical, and sustainable go-to-market strategies from farm to table.
My name is Mbalunoko, and welcome to the Mbalunoko podcast. I'm a farmer, and I created this podcast to discuss all things agriculture. I will be interviewing and having in-depth conversations with industry experts such as farmers, scientists, agronomists, agri-tech specialists, to policymakers and investors. Basically, anyone you can think of in agriculture and across its value chain. So let's dive right into today's episode.
Shireen, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. It's lovely to have you here. By means of introduction, tell us about who you are and what your company, Seafruit, does.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be chatting to you today. My name is Seafruit, my name is Shireen Gelbert. I'm a horticultural by first trade or education. I started Seafruit, the company, 5 years ago, when the berry industry in South Africa was actually just busy taking off. There was an opportunity there was a need, which I saw in the industry, for someone that looks at the whole spectrum of products, not just the top range of or grade of fruit. There was a necessity that you actually look at where you can send the export fruit, but also where lower grades can maybe still go to local market or trading environments. And so today, Seafruit does fresh, frozen, and dried fruits. And we try to add value to every grade of fruit as far as possible and have as little waste as possible and try to give nutrition at a valuable, affordable price to all consumers throughout the value chain, but also add as much value back to a grower. And we always try to say that we try to create value for everyone in the food chain and as much money back in the pocket of the farmer per hectare at the end of the day.
That sounds amazing. You know, superfruits and fruits like the ones you've mentioned are quite in demand in the industry. But do you work with farmers? And if so, how do you work with them?
We do work with a very large range of farmers. We have on our books over 60 different farmers, some emerging farmers, some large-scale commercial growers. And so it varies depending on who we're working with. Some growers require more technical support. They have perhaps, we've had growers come from different industries and starting, which don't know a lot about farming. And then they can ask, I've had questions like, what is a pallet? Or what should I, what is PPCB or global gap? And some basic terminology, but we're not scared to take on smaller growers and help educate them. Over the years, we've developed a guide for growers. As we get these questions, we try to document them as well as possible and then send out that supporting document to growers that we start with and create a support team around them to help them get up and going. And then look at their specific farm and needs. That's a very important start for us. I always start with, where are you based? What does your climate look like? What are the possible crops that we can look at? How much size do you have? What are your resources? What do you already have in place in terms of infrastructure and up to just a very normal B2B commercial conversation with someone which knows all of those things already and doesn't need any of that support.
And so am I correct in saying that you are a pack house procuring directly from the farmers and then you add value into whatever the fruit is that you have an offtake with and then export it? Is that correct?
So you are correct. We sometimes do dive a little bit deeper. So I'm going to use the gooseberry industry as an example. We would see there's a high value crop with low volume that is a feasible opportunity for especially emerging growers. But there wasn't someone, for example, making good plant material. And the growers didn't necessarily have access to the seeds or something like that. Then we wouldn't be scared to go and look for the actual plant material and then go and make the plant material at a nursery and then allocate that towards growers. So we sometimes vertically integrate a little bit deeper, but in essence, that grower or outgrower that we've partnered with, he would then grow the gooseberries for us. We would look as far as whether if the growers don't have infrastructure because it's quite a new industry or something new, and they don't necessarily have crates to pick into, we would get involved in purchasing the crates and doing it on a higher fee or something like that, and then helping the product come to us. So we don't just say, here's an order, deliver it at our pack shed, and that's it. We try to there was a need with berries to be a little bit more creative and think out the box and try to add value to niche products where there wasn't proper infrastructure and ways of doing it yet. But as the industries grow, some of them mature. So nowadays, with something like blueberries, for example, most of the growers they get their own plant material, they know how to pick and harvest it, and then we would put in an order with them and say, we require so much product to be delivered ready packed sometimes to the pack shed, and we just do the staging. Or if the farmer doesn't have a packing equipment on the farm, we would also be able to help pack it at our facility, and then we can export it or distribute it to the local market.
Awesome. So Shireen, just tell me, with seafruit, right, what are the requirements that you need from the farmers in order for the farmer to supply into your pack house? So do they have to have global GAP? Any other form of certification? If you could maybe please explain to us what type of certification a farmer needs to be able to supply to seafruit.
So nowadays, it's extremely important with new legislation that came out with the R638 with food safety, is that there are minimum requirements that retailers require to be in place, especially things like your good agricultural practices, your GAP and so forth. So in the past, there wasn't as much pressure to necessarily have global GAP, and we could help smaller growers where they were still busy getting it in place. But from the onset now, we try to encourage growers to get global GAP and immediately, and we will try and help and support them in getting the global GAP. It is, at the end of the day, a very good management tool or management practice, whether you're a small or large enterprise. It helps you manage your business very well at the end of the day. And then, of course, which is something that's very important now, is the focus on ethics and sustainability and the environment. So nowadays, growers are also required to at least go and do a self-assessment with CESA or CEDEX. There are some tools that you can use on the internet, which we will also advise growers, and it just adds value to your global GAP and your management systems on the farm, and make sure that it actually helps you, give you the tools to help manage things like your HR and your personnel development and everything. So for Seafruit at the moment, if someone comes to us and doesn't have it in place yet, that's one of the things that we will help them get in place. And we can help move their fruit into informal markets and trading environments without that as a start. But it would be a phased approach where at a certain, within a certain amount of time or a few months, we would have to get the grower up to our standard or minimum standard, which is a global GAP and a CESA audit.
It's very rare that I meet a female founder who runs and owns a pack house, right? And especially with such high value commodities, Shireen, I'm being honest here. Tell me, what does it take to run a pack house, a fully fledged pack house that not only caters to the export market, but from the local market? You alluded to how you started Seafruit, but what does it take really to run a pack house?
I think you need to be a little bit crazy.
I really don't blame you.
So it's a very detailed operation. So I, in my experience, the men usually tell me, oh, it's because women are good at detail, and I always get a little bit like, no, that's not it, because I'm not always the most organized person. I make sure that my team around me is extremely organized. I align myself with the right team members, but you have to be creative, I think, more than anything else. There is so many challenges, and if you have the you have to be able to think on your feet and think very fast, and then you have to have a meticulous team around you that implements and optimizes every single day. A pack shed can, you know, whether you've got one pallet inside or whether you have 20 pallets inside, the electricity bill is the same. And we're always constantly looking at how can we optimize and work as efficiently and fast as possible. How can we recycle, reuse, save? It has to be very clean. You have to uphold your food safety standards very strictly. You've got to be ready for impromptu visits from clients and supermarkets, and you want to be proud when you bring them into a pack shed. So management systems has really helped us. We've got very strict food safety, health and safety, and management practices. And then things start to automate. So if you're not always doing something you're not doing it just for an audit, then it becomes practice. So it's like teaching your kids to brush their teeth. If you're only going to do it once a week and or just before you go to the dentist, it's not really going to work. You have to scrub every day. So I'm very proud. I always get like a nice chill up my back when I happen to go after hours to our pack shed and I walk in and every table's in its place. Every floor has been scrubbed. Every place is looking like it should look. And that's my team. That's not me. I'm not always there anymore. I'm doing a lot of times business development and traveling to see markets and clients and things like that. But I never tell or forewarn someone that I'm coming in. But because of the good daily practices that we've put in place, it's become a habit and it's become a good practice. And that is good practice makes you also start measuring very efficiently. So we know exactly how many kilograms we've packed each day. We know each person how much they've packed. We know the efficiency. And that also helps when we start staffing, especially when you have different seasons and you have to bring in new staff. If you have good practices all around, the new guys fit into the culture very quickly of your company and they get trained of this is how we work here and this is how we measure ourselves here. And if someone's not making target, we don't take out a stick and hit them with it. We're very much about also fitting in the right person at the right for the right thing. Sometimes someone is not very good at something, then we can adjust them to a different team. And they maybe shouldn't be part of the husking team, but they do really well with the label sticking team or something like that. But you know what the top, you won't, if you don't know what that person should be measuring, you wouldn't know whether you should move someone or not. And then you'll just see a dip in your productivity and then you could come out and just shout at everyone, but it's not going to solve the problem. You can't shout at a coach, can't shout at a team to win. You've got to coach them and give them the skills to at the end of the day become good enough to be the best possible team. And so you kind of have to become a very good coach in a pack house to have a very efficient pack house.
Yeah. So moving on to markets, you mentioned that now you fully fledged into business development, you're seeing clients, you're engaging with clients, seeing new opportunities, etc. Do you run into problems where farmers perhaps, you know, have maybe an issue on the farm? It could have rained heavily. The trees might be affected by frost. Some farmers may be affected with drought. How do you bounce back from that where, you know, you've engaged with the farmer, you've got an offtake agreement in place with them, you're expecting a certain amount of tons of fruit in that particular month to be able to deliver to your clients. How do you bounce back when farmers have issues on their farm, but yet you still have a product to deliver? Do you then go to other markets, more so the fresh produce markets? And how's that journey in having to really source from alternative markets over and above the farmers that you work with?
Well, that's always a constant challenge. So that it's something which what helps us is the diversity of our pool of growers. So we quite often, this is why we have smaller growers and large commercial growers. So sometimes it can be easier to work with a large commercial grower because you get a bulk amount of product, but then you also get a bulk amount of problem if something goes wrong. So we would quite often, we work with a wide range of clients and a wide range of growers. So what happens is, a particular grower could have a very big program with export retailer and a local retailer, for example, and we could have the same program, but that grower would service 90% of it or 70% of it with someone else or something between the two of them, and we would do a 10 or 20% of the program. So we're not always the biggest player, but what helps is when that grower has an issue, we're working with seven other small growers to make up our volume. So we can then out of those growers quite often react and help the retailer or client make up that volume for what has been lost. So because it's not just us picking out one or two, a lot of small growers together can make up the volume, if that makes sense. So it definitely helps to have the diversity of our grower pool, and also the diversity of the areas. So we're working with growers from Zambia, Zimbabwe, up the north of the country, right around the coast of South Africa, down to Cape Town. So that we've just recently started working with people in Namibia. So that diversity helps us to lock in and help solve, or the one person's season, it might suddenly sort of raining. They might have ended a little bit sooner than expected. And then we can lock into the new area a little bit earlier than what is anticipated, and help mitigate that risk for our clients at the end of the day. We don't particularly like, we won't buy from the municipal market. We tend to supply the municipal market. So this sounds funny, but we will always have some of the local product going out, and we know what the prices are. And what happens is growers tend to phone us from speaking to their market agent, and we've got good relationship with the market agents, where the market agent will say, this grower is starting to deliver at certain weeks, he's actually delivering too much for me. And that drives down the prices on the municipal market. So for the marketing agent on the floor at your market agent, he also doesn't want to have too much product in that environment. And so we are a good partner for market agents to reference growers back to us, and we can start getting them into more formal programs with retailers, and it helps manages their price and their risk and their spread a little bit. So we will never go and dump something on the municipal market. We actually try to avoid those ups and downs, and we tend to not try to source there. We usually have a big pool of growers that we can alternatively contact and work a plan out with.
I love your model, Shireen, because you're not only working with local farmers, but farmers in neighboring countries. And I mean, that's one way to de-risk, you know, your supply. And you mentioned something about prices. When you work with growers, do you already give them a price, let's say prior to planting or during planting, or is the price usually determined as and when the farmer now needs to harvest?
So I always say marketing is so difficult because you can't force someone to buy a chocolate from you. So and it's the same with fruit. So for us, as a marketer, I think it's my responsibility to develop markets and be responsible within markets that are developed. So I mentioned now we work with neighboring countries. So we would, for example, we do a lot of Middle East and Far East marketing for some Zimbabwean berries, and we import fruit into the South African market. One of the reasons we started doing exports into the Middle East and Far East for them is because we were seeing too much of their product was entering the South African market and was actually negatively influencing our farmer base. So you can actually and at some points, it actually positively does it because it holds the market space or the shelf space open because they have slightly different periods. So it is a balance of parts all the time. And when we make offtake agreements with growers, and some of our growers get funding from IDC and different funders and so forth, we tend to give them the historical pricing. This is what the price has been over the last 5 years. We've got all the records for local market and export, and we very happily share that information. We give an indicative price for a forward view, but because the especially berries is such a new industry, it's changing quite quickly. So we cannot predict. We try to use as much of our knowledge to know who's planted what, how much, how quickly, how big this is going. But then you also get things like COVID, where suddenly you can't fly berries, and a raspberry and a strawberry can't be, you can't put it in a shipping container and send it somewhere. It can only be flown. So that those type of things can have massive impacts. And if you had made a fixed price as a small business, you would already be out of business, if that makes sense. So for what I always say is I say to my growers, my job is for you as a marketer to create great markets, maintain good markets, and I need to be in the top three performing price-wise in the market. The market does what the market does. Depending on supply and demand, I must try and help manage that. But I need to be one of the top three people there. And when they start packing, we give them either a fixed price for the week, or if it is a very volatile environment, we will say it will be a range, depending if the, especially with exports where exchange rates and so forth are busy fluctuating, then we will say, okay, we're going to we'll make the grower part of the decision. So we'll say we're going to sell about $20,000 of your product. We have a forward cover model that we've negotiated with Investec, where we can take forward cover at this stage. Or would you like to take the risk and possibly, do you have a CSC account? Would you like to get the money back in dollars? And then you can exchange it when you are ready at a later time. So we do have all these different conversations. At the end of the day, my aim is to mitigate the risk with the grower, with around the market, give him as much rich information as possible, to make those decisions and understand the market himself, and then get as much money back in his pocket at the end of the day.
Having been around for 5 years, Shireen, what opportunities do you see in the fruit export market, and what type of fruits are in demand currently?
Berries is interesting. I'm going to start with the berries because that's what we've been really focusing on the last 5 years. So blueberries have grown phenomenally in South Africa over the last 5 years exponentially. And we had a very interesting conversation. A lot of people are starting to say there's too many blueberries. But we had this incredible conversation last week at Full Creek, one of the plant material suppliers of blueberries in South Africa. They had a wonderful Farmers Day last week, Friday, and they had a wonderful speaker. They're talking specifically about the European and market. And there's a lot of opportunity for blueberries to still grow. It is the consumption of blueberries versus other fruit is still very small. It's something like 28 grams per person or 280 grams per person per year still, where bananas, someone is consuming something like 12 kilos a year. So there is scope. What is very important is the costs are rising so much in terms of production, and the prices are stabilizing or coming down, and the honeymoon period for a crop like that has ended. So you can't choose the wrong cultivars. You need to have good cultivars. You need to have a good pack out. You have to have a good marketer, good access to market, and then you can still do very well with blueberries. And I think it's just it's an adaption as the industry is getting bigger. Because there are so many blueberries A retailer always looks at something as a category. So when something's on the shelf, for every 10 punnets of blueberries, they want 5 punnets or of something else. So raspberries, blackberries, gooseberries, that is something that we see is in huge demand at good prices. We are the missing link at the moment quite often is the right plant material in South Africa to make sure that we have good quality product that we can export. We've gotten some good cultivars that do very well for our local market, but we are not sure that they are traveling well enough with everything else. But there's a big opportunity to export those products as well. If we look at the strawberry industry in South Africa, about 5 years ago, when I started working with berries about 10 to 8 years ago, there wasn't really exported strawberries from South Africa at all. And a strawberry season could easily see strawberries coming down to between 30 and 50 rand a kilo, where on average now the local market is up to 80 rand a kilo because we started export blueberries, put berries from South Africa really on the map. And the strawberries kind of piggybacked on that, and the industry was already ready to export, and there's a huge demand for South African strawberries it's been a real success story in terms of the strawberries. In terms of other niche products, let's say everything around the blueberries is still busy growing with berries. But and then if you look at other high value, low volume niche products that we are getting demand for, it's something like baby veg that is definitely picking up in South Africa demand from elsewhere. And I think it's important for me to say just elaborate on the reason why the demand on these things are picking up. So traditionally, when blueberries started, everything was going to the UK as one market, and then we started supplying as from South Africa to the EU, and there wasn't really access to enough blueberries in the world at that stage to supply Middle East, Far East, and some of the other markets. And as the industry has grown, those markets have started growing because there's actually product to supply. And with niche products or high value products now getting onto the shelves in different places in the world, there's other products that are coming onto the space. So it's nice that now when I walk into some of the retailers abroad, in more niche markets, not mainstream markets, you start seeing South African edible flowers, some South African microgreens, baby veg and these things. So I think there's a new era of more niche markets that we're going to see starting to develop.
And so what's next for Seafruit? Where do you see yourself in the next 3 to 5 years? Are you looking to play or expand more in South Africa and in other markets?
Our project at the moment, or what we're focusing on, is we did the model a little bit the wrong way around, but on purpose. So our first few years were really focusing on developing as much of the local market as possible, and to ensure that we can add value to different grades of fruit. We have developed different tiers where we have premium lines and value lines on fresh, frozen, and dried product. And we're now taking and launching that in the our export is growing exponentially, especially as growers which have planted top fruit and full creek varieties or more open varieties as the African industry is busy opening up. Those are that I would say the next year and a half is really our focus to to expand or grow as far as possible with our exports. And then we've got some exciting things which are in the fire pit again, which we could probably talk about next year, not to let it go off too early. But we're always having something that's meandering and growing where we see gaps which still need to develop. Some of them, as you would know as an entrepreneur yourself, sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. Sometimes it's just a timing issue and the industry is not ready yet. But I really think our focus for our fresh, frozen and dried is looking at our expanding and leaning into our exports, and then we'll tell you, we'll have to catch up with you and tell you more about the embers in the fire.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much, Shireen, for our conversation, and all the best with your future endeavors.
Thank you so much. And Mbali, I really want to, I think we met in 2019, if I remember. Yeah. It's been amazing watching what you've doing and being another female founder and just the amazing opportunities that you've created like this to for people to learn and speak. I love listening to your podcasts, and I really encourage anyone out there to follow you and learn. And also, I remember one thing you said at a speaking event, and it really stood with me, was that you said it's important to ask questions, and to, and if people need any advice or want to ask a question, also they're always welcome to reach out to us, or if you see someone and we can help with some information. I think sharing is caring, and there is a lot of opportunity in South Africa, and we can, I think there's a new mindset with younger people to share information, which is fantastic. And I want to take my hat off to you for doing this.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Your feedback is always important. Therefore, please rate and review this podcast. You can follow me on social media at Mbali Nwoko on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, as well as YouTube. Should you wish to contact me directly, kindly send me an email at info@mbalinwoko.com. Look out for next week's episode. Until then, take care.